mortgage capital markets decisions carry real financial consequences. That's why Optimal Blue commissioned an independent ROI study with MarketWise advisors, analyzing results across hundreds of lenders. The study highlights consistent gains in efficiency, accuracy, and financial performance, including an average $1,006 net benefit per loan. To be notified when the full 2026 Optimal Blue ROI study is released in May, sign up at optimalblue.com/2026-study.
There's more dissenters that do not want to cut rates, which goes against what the administration would like, against what I think a lot of folks in the mortgage industry would like, but starting to see more dissent, which I don't know. Kind of, do you think that indirectly then sort of keeps rates, market rates higher?
Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Vice President of Hedging and Trading Client Services at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode. Hi, welcome everybody. It's December. We're in the last month of the year. In the interest of keeping you informed, we're going to have a little market update today, even though there's not a ton going on in the social media, not a ton of economic data coming out yet, kind of in that hangover from the government shutdown still. But we'll sit down with Alex and James, talk a little bit about some numbers we will see this week, as well as the upcoming FOMC meeting and rate decision that should be coming up next week, December the 10th. We'll also just talk in general, some thoughts around just possible dissension in the ranks of the Fed as we look towards a probably very different looking Fed in terms of the members, the voting members, as we go into 2026, right? We're pretty much done with 2025, other than this one meeting coming up and then the subsequent unemployment number coming after that. Then it's kind of, you know, short on data again. But there will be changes at the Fed. That's been signaled and that's become obvious. So we'll talk a bit more about what that could look like going into next year. Before we get to that, just in the way of data, rates still, you know, stubbornly don't want to get below 6%. We're at 6.14 now. So we have marched a little bit lower as we've gone through the first holiday, and the 10-year as well, 4.09. So the spread is continuing to tighten a little bit, but also the 10-year is cooperating somewhat. And volume hasn't really slowed into the holidays as we typically see it, that's a good sign, we think. So let's go check in with Alex and James and see what they have to say about some of these things. All right. As promised, everyone, we've got Alex and James with us today. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for being here. Let's just talk a little market, right? We've got through the holiday. We got through the market shutdown. Now we're gearing up for the end of the year, which tends to be, I don't know, maybe a little bit slow in terms of lock volume in our industry, but certainly you can go out, what do they say? You can go out like a lion or a lamb, right? In terms of the equities markets, and certainly we're a little bit more concerned with bond markets, but there's always this debate on what's December going to look like, and are people getting out of the market or getting back in. But again, flipping back to interest rates, right? We have a couple of things coming up that I think will be pretty important for us. And one big one that we want to get to here in a little bit is the Fed decision that's coming up next week. But what do we have in the way of data like here just over this coming week? What should we be paying attention to?
I'm keeping my eye on the Wednesday private payrolls, and we are going to get PCE data that's mighty delayed on Friday. Look into the private payrolls this time around on Wednesday, just because we're not getting the non-farm payrolls for the month. So you're going to have to lean on the next best thing being those ADP payrolls. So we'll see how the employment picture is looking. This is kind of one of the first post-government shutdown readings we're going to get. So it's going to be really interesting to see what we can parse out of that data. And then just on the inflation front, just looking at PCE numbers on Friday, those are going to be kind of the two big ones. Other than that, I mean, those hit our two metrics that we're always looking at on unemployment and the balance with inflation. So those are the two.
Notably on Friday, first Friday of the month, there will not be a jobs report this time due to the shutdown. over the last month, they've canceled the October jobs report. So you're not going to see those numbers. So as always, a little bit more fog in the data right now.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely still kind of at the tail end of this drought of data we've been in for 6 to 8 weeks or so now. Hopefully beginning next week, we'll start to see that pickup as we see the delayed numbers begin to come out for November.
Yeah, I've seen some debate online, even some folks suggesting that the Fed delay their meeting till after the non-farm number, because we got the September number a couple of weeks ago and it was sort of inconsequential, right? This is the one that everyone's been waiting for. Is this December number that's going to tell us what jobs look like in November, but it's just a week after the Fed. So all the Fed has, like you said, they've got this private payrolls from ADP, they've got PCE, they got a little bit of CPI that was done for the sake of the Social Security benefits. So just an interesting time, I think, going into the end of the year. And there's been like more and more articles written, right? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where 6 months ago, you would have thought the Fed was about to be kind of taken over by the White House. There was rhetoric around that. There was, you know, you had the Lisa Cook drama, then you had Myron coming in, and there has been some changes. There's certainly been a lot more dissent in the ranks, but lately that dissent has kind of gone the opposite direction, right? There's more dissenters that do not want to cut rates, which goes against what the administration would like, against what I think a lot of folks in the mortgage industry would like, but starting to see more dissent, which I don't know. Kind of. Do you think that indirectly then sort of keeps market rates higher, because there was this expectation for the longest time that if rates move, they're going to go down, right? If the Fed moves rates, the rates are going to go down. But now there's this debate that's kind of putting the brakes on that. Maybe not rate hikes in the near future, but it really questions the 12 to 18 month outlook, right? Like, what do you think the effect is of just this indecisive Fed that's not really following each other, not following the consensus?
Yeah, I do want to note that we've only had one official dissent for keeping rates where they're at out of a meeting. You know, that was Kansas City Fed governor from the last meeting. And then we've had others imply or outright say, just not in, you know, an official voting capacity, that they, you know, see the argumentation that they're looking at it. So I think there were two or three others that said that they could be convinced in that direction. But it's been, you know, we're coming up, we've got 9 days till the next meeting. So it's been a while since the last meeting. We've only had that one sharp dissent. We've had, at the same time, we've had two or three others who are, you know, falling into Myron's camp and saying, you know, we need to be more aggressive with our cuts. So I'm with you that I think that there's probably for the first time in maybe call it this decade, you know, a large degree of dissent from, I don't want to call it the norm, but everyone seemed to be voting in lockstep for the past 5 years, likely due to extraordinary times. But yeah, Powell's Fed has been extremely voting down the line. Jim, you were pointing out before we began recording, but this is actually kind of more of a historical anomaly. And during like Bernanke and Yellen's tenure, you saw not as high as we might be approaching now, but we were seeing greater number of voices dissenting on any given opinion, whether to the upside or the downside. I think you said it was like 20% or so under Bernanke and then 30-40% under Yellen. But right now here in the tail end of Powell's term, we're beginning to see that approach probably like a 50%, you know, like a 5-7 vote or something like that. Again, we haven't officially seen a 5-7 vote, but we have the voices potentially leaning that way.
Yeah, and it was actually it was the other way around, I think. But so yeah, I was reading this article that basically said that under Bernanke and Yellen, there were more often than not, there was some dissent, but it was typically like one vote going in against the consensus, right? So what we're seeing now that could be unusual is something closer to 50-50, possibly. Like you said, it hasn't happened yet, but there's this growing kind of rhetoric in the media and in these press conferences. And you can see it with the CME, right? It's 50-50. Whether we're going to see a cut next month, I can't remember the last, or next week, I can't remember the last time we saw that kind of split, right? So that has to be, it's making it difficult for the market makers to decide which way our rates are going. So there has to be, it has to have some effect just on overall, especially long-term rates, when no one really knows what the path looks like for the next 12 to 18 months versus when you have more of a moving in lockstep, like you said, where everybody's kind of, you know, everyone has similar opinions. There's no strong opinion otherwise. So I think historically, even in that situation, if there was no strong opinion to dissent, a lot of the Fed voters would just vote with the majority. They would vote with the consensus. They would come, they would appear to be unified, which gave even more confidence to the markets that rates were going in the direction that everyone thinks they're going, right? But now we have this split potentially. We have the rhetoric is starting to cause a split where the money is kind of on both sides of the trade.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. CME has swung pretty wildly in the last 2-3 weeks. We saw it go from 90% chance for a cut down to a 30% chance of a cut. And now it's back up around 80-85%. So it's been quite varied. And this was all driven by comments made by those governors in their non-official voting capacity. So it's definitely interesting. And I could even see maybe like a three-way split, you know, beginning to emerge. You know, Kansas City governor was saying that we've cut too aggressively. And yeah, maybe if we saw like a 3-4-5 vote split or something emerge, that would be even add an additional layer of drama.
Right.
Yeah, but that's total speculation.
Ted, on to something we had talked about in months previous is that really when the Fed is influencing rates, what they're influencing is the 2-year part of the curve, right? And what we're seeing in mortgage rates is built off of the 2 and the 10, that spread there. So that 10-year is much more about long-term confidence, what the government is doing, are we going to be able to pay back our bills, so on and so forth. And so the Fed is really influencing that 2-year arm, and the more kind of dissent or confusion or just possibility of that 2 not going in the direction we thought, like already it's going to peak up, right? Like we've been struggling to get under that 6% number. Hey, even if the Fed kept coming or cutting, could we cut it more and more, get underneath that 6% has been a big question mark. And now as soon as you start looking at, hey, maybe this rate is not going to go down any further, it's going to push back up rather than steepening further down. So it's kind of what we've been seeing is that 2-year just not
right.
Not
we were so close.
How we might have wanted. Yeah,
yeah. We were at 6 1/8 there for a bit, you know, and now we're ticking up a little bit. And I think you're right. There's just that upward pressure, and a lot of that has to do with uncertainty. You know, the spread is continuing to stay compressed, and maybe compressing a little bit more. The spread between Treasuries and mortgages in general, but yeah, I don't think we're getting quite the cooperation that many had hoped for, or even demanded from the Fed doing their part in, you know, in lowering mortgage rates. So regardless of what happens with the decision next week, it's time to start looking forward to 2026, right? What does that rate path look like? And what does the FOMC look like? So it's been implied at this point, I believe, it's not for sure, but it's been implied. We think we know who the new Fed head is going to be, right?
Right now, the rumors around D.C. Appear to be that it'll be Kevin Hassett. He's got pretty extensive campaign experience. He worked on W. Bush's campaign. He worked on McCain's and Mitt Romney's campaigns. And then he got brought in during Trump 1, ran on the National Economic Council, did some work from the economic angle during the COVID era. And then he's also done some time at the American Enterprise Institute, which is a conservative-leaning think tank. So he's definitely been around the block on the D.C. circuit, knows his way around. Trump was asked point blank on the Air Force One this past weekend if Hassett was going to be the nominee. He demurred and said, we're going to have an announcement about it. Stop asking. But right now, that seems to be who it'll be. You know, just kind of this guy's, you know, resume, I kind of see him very much so being in the Myron image. And I think that's kind of what they're going for. I think they want to stalk the Fed with people who think similarly to Myron and get the rate cuts that they've been asking for. So, you know, as we discussed here, they can at least get that 2-year arm of the equation to behave.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, it feels like the Fed will continue to start moving that way towards, I don't know, more of a, I don't know, it, maybe we get a little bit of a dip in rates just on the news if it becomes evident that Hassett is the nominee? Or do you feel like we've already seen that just because the idea is that the administration wants lower rates, they're going to bring in somebody very dovish, very kind of low rate friendly? Or is Hassett a big enough deal that once that's announced, do we feel like rates will dip a little bit on that?
As it gets locked in, I could see it getting, you know, dipping a little bit on that news. But I would think it's for the most part locked in at this point. I think if we're talking about, you know, how, because it's not just going to be Hassett, you know, Bostic's going to retire. We're going to see a number of appointments in the coming, not even year, in the first half of next year. That should swing the composition pretty heavily in favor of the Myron camp.
Jim, as you were saying at the beginning of this, you know, it felt, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, hey, the White House will just have control of the Fed by now. And it hasn't happened by now, but it is just a certain thing. It will happen over the next coming months, just with the turnover there. So with that, it should all kind of be priced in, right? We know this changing of the guard is coming. We know kind of the ideas that are going to be put into the Fed. So you'd think that more rate cuts would be priced in. And, you know, Mirren has been very loud about what he wanted, and he's even backed off some. So it's hard to imagine Hassett coming in, just sitting down first day being like, I think we should cut 2 full points right now, right? Like something completely wild. With his resume and his kind of background, it seems he would be pretty reasonable here. I think it's all priced in. I don't imagine a huge cut, maybe, or a huge change, maybe day of a little swinging around, but I don't think the pressure is going to be enough.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, as we pointed out, and you all know by now, that the chair doesn't make all the decisions, right? If there's an obvious direction of rates, typically all the members vote together, and they vote typically with what the chairperson is voting. So just bringing in Hassett's not going to turn the tide immediately, but bringing in additional appointees over 2026 probably will make for a more dovish Fed, just a Fed that's going to be more business and market friendly, right? So we'll have to see what that looks like in 2026, what that does for things like inflation, likely have not seen the end of, and things like jobs, you know, that are hopefully going to improve next year if we do see lower rates or just a new business cycle. All right. What else on this, gentlemen?
I think we're safe to leave it there. Feeling for today. Good? Yeah. It's, again, pretty quiet out there. News cycle's been relatively slow on the economic front, and we're really kind of, I don't want to speak without seeing the data first, as we always say on the podcast. So yeah, I think next week we'll get a little bit more revealed to us, and we'll get to hype up the coming rate decision.
Good. Yeah, agreed. Certainly short on data. There's not been a ton of rhetoric in the social media to talk about on the podcast. So we'll leave you with that, just contemplating what will happen with the rate decision next week and then the subsequent jobs report. And then we get right into the holidays. And we'll see you on a couple more podcasts this year. We will likely have a little bit of a holiday special here coming up, I think. Maybe we'll talk a little favorite Christmas movies like we did last year. All right, Alex, James, always appreciate it. Thanks for your time. Thanks for the wisdom. Talk again next week.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, guys. All right, another great episode. Thank you, James. Thank you, Alex. That's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning in to Optimal Insights.
Speed matters in lending, and borrowers expect instant answers. But traditional loan locking ties you to a desk, slowing decisions and creating friction. That's why Optimal Blue introduced mobile locking in our mobile app. Now, loan officers can lock loans anytime, anywhere, fast, secure, and accurate. Access your live pipeline, update loan details, run pricing, and complete locks right from your phone. No delays, no desk dependency, just instant action that enhances the borrower experience. Unlike browser-based tools, mobile locking is built into our native iOS and Android app for faster load times, stronger security, and a seamless experience. And the best part? It's included at no extra cost for all Optimal Blue PPE users. Download the Optimal Blue mobile app today and start locking loans on the go. Access, price, lock, it's that simple.